This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. I'm Caleb Brown. Government is a lousy lender, but that hasn't stopped the feds from moving more deeply into the allocation of capital in a wide range of areas. Mike Brannan is a visiting fellow at the Cato Institute. He writes in the latest Regulation magazine about government's poor record discerning qualified borrowers. What roles does the government have in, broadly speaking, lending?
It has a lot of them. It has way too many, in my opinion. So in housing, it plays an enormous role. And it does so in two different ways. The first thing, of course, is that it has we have a tax incentive call where we allow people to deduct the mortgage interest they pay on their house. This costs the federal government about $80 billion a year in foregone taxes. The 10-year budget number that CBO uses is about $1 trillion. And this greatly influences the housing market. And it doesn't help anyone buy houses, right? The dirty little secret is that only 30% of all individuals itemize, the richest 30%. And so those are the only ones who avail themselves of the mortgage interest deduction.
And it's not people that buy houses in another way, because a lot of people, it's anybody who has a mortgage, right. not people who buy houses, right? There's a difference.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This has completely distorted that market. So it encourages people to take out bigger loans and buy bigger houses if they can. And so, a lot of things have depending on where you're at on the whole McMansion thing, there's a lot of blame to go around about whether or not the expansion of suburbia and the growth of housing is a good thing or a bad thing. But it's largely been driven by the mortgage interest deduction.
So people buy bigger lot sizes.
Yeah, and they fill up those lots with bigger houses. So, look, people are getting wealthier. I mean, this notion that somehow the last 3 or 4 decades has emissarized the U.S. is nonsense. Our standard of living, by any honest measure, has improved greatly. And so what people have done is they've used some of this, a good portion of the generally increasing incomes, to have bigger and nicer houses. But this has been greatly exacerbated by the tax incentives.
All right. So as I've talked with Mark Calabria in the past, he advocates getting rid of the mortgage interest deduction.
That's absolutely. Mark and I are on the same page of that. We should get rid of it. I think the realtors have a contract out on my life. I've written so much about it. So yes, it does absolutely no good. And it's the realtors and the home builders and the mortgage bankers are the reason we'll never get rid of that, right? Realtors benefit greatly from this because it increases the value and the cost of the upper-end houses, and that's where they make all their money. So if you kind of look at the budget of these entities, right, the realtors, their lobbying group here, their interest group, their annual budget is $300 million a year. And they've made comments like, we could raise twice that if there was ever a push against the mortgage interest deduction, right? It's hard to find anyone who has any vested interest in defeating the mortgage interest deduction. So there has been this backdoor push to get rid of the mortgage interest deduction. And that is in these tax proposals, sort of like what the House of Representatives Blueprint for Economic Growth has in it. Jeb Bush had this. And what those do is they greatly increase the personal exemption and they lower tax rates. And what this does is instead of 30% of everyone itemizing in those plans, it was less than 5%. Well, it's only 4 or 5% of everybody itemizing. All of a sudden, it becomes a lot easier to get rid of certain deductions, right? Then the backers of the mortgage deduction have nothing else to say when people say, look, this is only going to the upper echelons. They're been pushing back hard on the on those plans as well.
And it essentially contributes to people going into debt when they might not otherwise.
That's right. That's right. And this is People take out more. It's a rational decision to take out more mortgage debt because of this.
Speaking of going into debt when you might not otherwise, the government has also taken a massive expansion of its role in student lending over the past 10 years.
That's right. So it's exceeded $1 trillion right now. And basically, the government now has a monopoly on this. And so one of the things I argue in that piece is that a government monopoly in this has been a terrible, terrible thing. What it's done essentially is it's created the same sort of environment that led to the housing crisis and financial collapse in 2008. So the big problem right now is there is a gigantic disintermediation between students who borrow for college and their colleges. So if your son or daughter is going to go attend Harvard and they have to pay full freight and they take out student loans, Harvard does not care whether or not your child has the wherewithal to finish college and pay that money back. Right? They're going to get that money no matter what. And so colleges have this incentive to take students who might not be all that good at college because they know they're going to get their money. So I think, you know, I'm kind of agnostic about the difference between for-profit and non-profit colleges, but the for-profit colleges have definitely taken advantage of this fact. So they are very aggressive about recruiting people and encouraging them to take out student loans, because as soon as they get the student loans, they don't care at all what happens to that student next post.
And for a lot of colleges, you see very high rates of remediation for schools, and I assume student lending contributes somewhat to that.
Yeah, no, that's right. So, you know, I have another report coming out at the end of this month by is being published by the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute. And one of the things I look at there are just in the University of Wisconsin, what are the student retention rates at the various colleges? And an amazingly small number of people graduate from a public college after 4 years. At Madison, the flagship university where you have to have excellent SAT scores and grade points to get in, it's well below 50%. For a school like the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, a fine school, fine regional school, one I taught at, that number is more like 25%. Like, it's rare to have somebody finish in 4 years. And after 6 or 7 years, at a place like Oshkosh, barely half of those students who started have finished a degree. And there's many problems. Right? I'm not sure the best way to educate give college education to students is to have these large universities, and my piece is about how to fix them. But they are taking in, there's no doubt they are taking in students who they know do not have the wherewithal to finish college. And so one of the points I make in that paper is who are we doing a favor for when we admit somebody who has very little chance of getting into college and then encouraging them to take on some debt in order to finance that? Like, if that's not exploitation, I'm not sure what is.
As you point out, the colleges have nothing to lose, so student lending seems to be a benny for universities and not quite as much for students.
That's right, because the elasticity of supply for college education is relatively low, so most of that shows up in higher prices. So, you know, one of the things that I think people have trouble with is when they see a high sticker price. Oh my gosh, college is so expensive. Well, it's expensive for a small number of people, right? Most people get some kind of financial aid, but one of the downsides is that when people do get financial aid, a lot of times that simply lowers how much they get outside financial aid, or they get student loans that lowers how much money they end up getting from the college, and that all that money just gets captured by the college, and they say, "Well, we're not going to give you a discount after all."
To say nothing of the Small Business Administration, right? We're talking about government as you say, a lousy lender, but the Small Business Administration has a pretty poor track record.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's inherently difficult for anybody to figure out which small business is going to boom and which isn't going to boom, right? We have this entire venture capital industry in Silicon Valley, and there's a smaller one in D.C. and elsewhere. And that's what they do, is they try to identify which small firms are going to grow. And look, these venture capitalists who have really smart people who have a lot of money riding on the outcome of their bets, they make a lot more mistakes than they get things right. You know, every once in a while they hit a Facebook, but usually they hit a lot of clunkers. And the idea that the federal government is going to have a bunch of GS-12s try to do the same thing, it's of course absurd.
And we haven't even mentioned really the ways that the government controls the process of lending without being a direct lender itself.
Well, you know, one other thing, I'm not sure I mentioned this in this piece, is what's going on right now is a bunch of states are starting their own retirement savings accounts. I think this is just a terrible, terrible precedent to set. And the idea is, well, these people, if their employer isn't starting some kind of retirement account, the state should have this, and the state can run it like just like it runs these college accounts. And first of all, like I have a college retirement account for my children, and these aren't run all that well at all. Granted, look, they farm these things out, but the dirty little secret is, when Washington, D.C. asked State Street Investments to run their fund, they're not charging the same rates they would charge you and I if we went in off the street and went there. They charge an extra half percentage point, and State Street gets to keep that for their little their pot of cash, and then Washington, D.C. keeps that for their administration. So, you know, the Department of Labor just passed this large regulation trying to reduce how much retirement investors charge on their fees for people who are investing with them. And at the same time, they're creating this whole new competitor for them that's going to charge higher fees, but it's going to have this inherent default advantage. To me, it's mind-boggling that they're doing these things at almost the same time.
Back to housing, you know, if you get an FHA loan for your home, what is the amount you put down? 3.5%?
I think today it's something like that.
Which has been identified, not that specific thing, but low down payments for homes was a key factor in the housing collapse.
What's more, this administration is putting pressure on lenders to do more to lend to minorities and other people who generally have lower housing rates. It's 7 years after the financial collapse. It's like it never happened. We're doing the same things we did back in the early 2000s. To me, it's mind-boggling to have the president say, we need to be a little more aggressive in who we lend for home lending. The other point is that housing, owning a house is not some kind of unalloyed good. I'm not quite sure when we decided that owning a home is equivalent to, you know, apple pie and Chevrolet and all this stuff. But there's nothing inherently virtuous of this. You know, Ed Glaser's made this point before. You know, people always trot out these statistics showing that people who own a house are more civically engaged, they're more responsible, they save more, and therefore this is caused by home ownership. It's spurious logic, right? It's the causation goes the other way around. It's if you've got your act together, you're civically engaged in all these things, you have the wherewithal to buy a house. And there's we ascribe way too much salutary behavior from the mere fact of someone owning a house.
What are some steps that have been offered? You mentioned some tax plans that have been offered to sort of get the government out of subsidizing debt, mortgage debt,
yeah,
at least, and student debt to some extent. But what else could we do to get the government sort of out of the way of allowing private markets to be take that greater traditional role of allocating capital?
Yeah. So I have this piece I did a few months ago in the Weekly Standard, and I suggested we get rid of the bankruptcy exemption for student loans. Right now, if you have a student loan and you file bankruptcy, you cannot get out of that student loan. And the only other thing that's treated like this are federal taxes. So there is no justification for this. And so what I've argued is you should treat it like any other debt. And in effect, you should rearrange the system so that the university itself has some skin in the game. So if you file bankruptcy and you go out, the college has to pay some portion of that.
I've talked with Megan McArdle about exactly this point, and she suggests that the bankruptcy code in the United States is one of the great features of the United States because it the United States is all about second chances. And it seems that having the lender do more due diligence, that is, there's this implicit risk that they take in lending that, at least with student lending, you're saying is just not the case.
No, absolutely. The federal government doesn't need to do due diligence. The college doesn't need to do due diligence. All they need to know is the federal government will guarantee it. Therefore, you can make the loan. You can be sure you're going to get your money. So there's a lot of things we have to fix there. You know, the other thing we could do along these lines is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have created a lot of problems as well, and I think we need to do some kind of reform there as well. The way it works right now, nearly every single mortgage that's conforming, that is, it's less than $600,000 or $700,000, depending where you're at, is essentially bought by Fannie and Freddie Mac. There is no private market, and so they really dictate the terms to by which people make home loans. And look, I think the securitization of home loans is a wonderful innovation. It's done a lot of good in the United States, but the idea that we have to have some kind of federal guarantee is just nonsensical. And I think what we've seen before is that Fannie and Freddie became inherently corrupt enterprises the last decade. They were just too tied to their congressional patrons, and they made a lot of bad decisions, one of which was to buy any single piece of mortgage that was available to them in order to encourage home lending. And I think we need to figure out how to radically reform this, if not just start over or get rid of it or let the private market do it.
Ike Brannon is a visiting fellow at the Cato Institute. His latest piece, Government is a Lousy Lender, is in Regulation magazine. Subscribe to and rate this podcast at iTunes, Google Play, and with Cato's iOS app. And follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.